This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Our entire system of government is dependent on elections being fair and correct. Ballot boxes aren't stuffed, the numbers add up correctly, and the candidate with the most votes wins. The elections are supposed to be an accurate representation of the will of the people, or at least of the people who decided to vote, and in exchange, the people consent to be governed. But there's a growing concern that those in power want to remain in power, and they're resorting to a deep bag of election rigging tricks to subvert the people's will to win or keep their office in government. So how safe is your vote and the entire election system? I spoke with Beth Stevens, the Voting Rights Program Director at the Texas Civil Rights Project.
Things are different in some regard. We have had a fantastic turnout across the state, and in fact, an inspiring turnout among voters age 18 to 29. They've increased by 506% for the same time period as 2014. So that is incredibly exciting and inspiring. And it comes in the face of efforts and laws in Texas that are meant to actually make it more difficult for people to vote. And the Texas Civil Rights Project helps spearhead the biggest nonpartisan election protection effort in the state. We've been running that hotline, which is 866 Our Vote, and answering voters' questions since the start of early voting. The issues we've seen, like I said, some are different, but some are, is, you know, sad to say, the same as we see election after election in Texas. And examples of that are the voter registration issues that we hear about from voters day in and day out during this election protection effort demonstrate that our state's paper-based voter registration is really and truly an archaic system. And it is, in fact, leaving people out and making sure that their voices are not heard through their vote. And a perfect example of this is phone calls that we've been getting from voters who updated their driver's license address online when they moved from County A to County B. And they checked the box that asks about voter registration when they did that. And then they found out when they went to vote in their new county that their voter registration address was not updated through that process. And we filed a lawsuit actually about this in 2016, but we've seen in this election in the last 2 weeks, it is still happening to voters and their voices are being shut out. They are not able to cast a full ballot.
Now, in the judge in that case, didn't he tell Texas that they needed to implement an electronic signature capability for online voter registration?
What he said was that Texas needed to implement a process through which voters who update their driver's license online are able to update their voter registration or register to vote if they're not actually registered yet. And to do that, there has to be a system that Texas comes up with to allow that to happen. And that can look like a few different ways. But he very much said that they have to do this for the 1.5 million Texans who transact with DPS online each year. And then, as we saw shortly after the court made that decision, the state of Texas appealed that decision up to the Fifth Circuit. And so we are still pursuing that case in front of the appellate court.
And it's because of that appeal that the Texas Secretary of State's office is not complying with the judge's orders.
That's right. That's right.
Even though we know that this action is disenfranchising thousands of Texans who want to vote.
That's right. And we are hearing example after example from voters right here, right now. Yes.
And to your view, is there's no good reason why this should continue as of right now? I mean, how does this activity protect the vote, which is what the Texas Secretary of State's office is trying to do?
That is a dog whistle. There are systems in place, and in fact, the way that voter registration works when people transact with the Department of Public Safety in person right now are done in the same way that we are arguing that folks who transact with DPF online should be able to take advantage of as well. So that is a red herring, a dog whistle. It is distracting from the fact that they already do this for millions of people in the state.
The Texas Civil Rights Project was a leading participant when early voting sites were shut down at the Texas State University in San Marcos. They had 3 days of early voting, long lines. When the fourth day came, there were no more voting booths because of the way they had scheduled early voting in that county. So what happened?
So what happened was, you're exactly right, there were extremely long lines for the couple of days of early voting that were provided on campus at Texas State. We heard from groups that help voters get out to vote, from voters themselves, actually a couple of students on campus at Texas State who had not gotten the opportunity to go vote, particularly because the lines were so long. Heard from them that there needed to be another location on campus. So we investigated and realized actually that Hayes County was in violation of state law and federal law by not having this polling location on campus for a more period of the early voting. And so we sent them a legal demand letter, and the next day Hayes County let us know that they agreed to keep an early voting location this Thursday and Friday, so yesterday and today, as well as add the polling location on campus for Election Day. So all 3 more days of voting. And yesterday we saw that in Hayes County, that polling location on campus had the highest turnout of any polling location in the county.
The argument that you brought forth to the Hayes County commissioners was that they were discriminating against a class of people, which were students. Is there any particular reason why this class would be discriminated against?
Well, I mean, that is exactly one of our arguments that we made. The reasons are, I think, several fold, but include that those in power in this state benefit from kind of the status quo as it comes to voter participation. And so increased turnout, particularly of young people who are new to the process, does not benefit those in power. And so there are efforts in counties and in the state across in Texas to suppress that vote.
If we had a full and functioning Voting Rights Act, would some of these issues be taken care of?
Oh, absolutely. So Texas was under the Voting Rights Act when Section 5 was in place before it was gutted. Many of the laws, polling location changes, policy decisions made by both the county and the state would have to have been run through a process to get approval before they could implement that and affect voters. And in fact, I mean, the photo ID law in Texas is a perfect example. It was held up in that process until the decision came down from the Supreme Court that gutted that section of the Voting Rights Act. And then Texas immediately implemented the law, even though it had been shown to be discriminatory.
We've heard about voting purges in other states, knocking people out of the voter registration rolls. Is that an issue in Texas?
It is an issue in Texas. Actually, we've heard from voters through our election protection effort, voters who haven't moved, have been living at the same place that they have lived at for years, and they've been taken off the rolls. And so we're looking into that for each individual voter. Just improper purges across the board are a concern. You may have seen that there was an effort by one individual in Harris County. I say it's an effort by one individual, only one person brought it, to challenge thousands of voters, registered voters in that county, about 6 weeks ago, and essentially challenged them under state law that was passed right after the Voting Rights Act passed, that allows for individual voters to come up and say, hey, I don't think this person is registered to vote. And in under state law, for that to set off a course of events that could result in an individual, or in this case, thousands of individual voters being taken off the rolls.
So right now, today, on Election Day, when people go to go vote, and if they find out that they can't vote because of something hinky happened to their voter registration, what should they do?
We would encourage them to call our nonpartisan hotline at 866-OUR-VOTE. We can help troubleshoot the issue for the person right then and there. And then we also have ongoing advocacy and litigation surrounding issues that come up during the election.
So you need to gather data about what's going on from people who are trying to vote, and then they run into these obstacles. But also you can provide instantaneous assistance. Should they be asking for, if they can't get through, should they try some sort of backup ballot?
A provisional ballot. So if an individual is registered to vote in their county, and for some reason they're not coming up on the rolls, or they're having a problem demonstrating, for example, their photo ID, they are entitled to cast a provisional ballot under federal law. And so that's kind of the backup for if they're not able to cast a regular ballot. Obviously, a regular ballot is preferable because it automatically counts, whereas a provisional ballot will be reviewed kind of after the fact to make sure that that it should count.
Beth Stevens is the Voting Rights Program Director at the Texas Civil Rights Project. We're taking a break and opening up the phone lines. What concerns do you have about the integrity of the elections? Are you worried about voter suppression, voter purges, gerrymandering, and other dirty electioneering tricks? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Back in a minute.
Support for TPR comes from AAA Auger Plumbing Services, providing 24/7 full-service drain cleaning and plumbing repair since 1962. More at aaa-auger.com or 210-341-6124. Support for TPR comes from Lewis Shanks Furniture, whose inventory includes home furnishing brands meeting all styles and taste, along with on-site designers and custom design center. We live to help you love where you live. I-10 at Huebner or lewisshanksfurniture.com.
Hi, I'm Nathan Cohn. Each fall, we turn over the TPR Cinema reins to our president and CEO for a special screening. This time, Joyce's Choice is the classic film Breakfast at Tiffany's, the Oscar-winning adaptation of Truman Capote's novella that captured the hearts of millions. Showtime for this special screening is 7:30 on Wednesday, November 14th at the Santico Silverado. Reserve your seat at tprcinema.org for a suggested $10 donation for TPR members or $15 for non-members. Proceeds benefit Texas Public Radio.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This election day, what rights do you currently have as a voter in the United States and in Texas? With early voting turnout surpassing that of previous midterms, citizens have so much to consider when heading to the polls. So how have our rights evolved in the state? Which problems persist? And how do politicians go about picking their own voters? We invite you to join our conversation as we talk about voting rights this afternoon. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. Go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. You can also send us a tweet on Twitter. With me right now in the studio is Henry Flores, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Mary's University and author of the book Latinos and the Voting Rights Act. Henry, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So on a day like today, Election Day, what do you look for when it comes to some sort of strange occurrences trying to mess with the vote?
Well, historically, in Texas, we've had all kinds of strange occurrences. There's actually been cases where election workers have told African-American voters, this situation happened in 2004, where an election judge in Killeen, Texas, actually told an African-American woman that Congress had withdrawn her voting rights, and black people no longer had the right to vote. Of course, the woman was a college-educated wife of an Army major stationed in Fort Hood, and she knew a lot better and filed a complaint. That's how I found out about it. You know, you've had cases where a political party, the Republican Party in past, has stationed individuals dressed in immigration-type uniforms close to the polls to intimidate voters. We've had, from an official point of view, the voter ID law, voter registration in the state of Texas, the paper registration is very, very difficult, and it's kind of erratic. A lot of people don't know exactly how to go about, one, obtaining the forms, and then difficulty filling them out, where do you send them, things of that nature. So voter education in the state of Texas is almost non-existent. When we passed the voter ID law in 2011, they also passed a bill that would fund voter education for registering and voter and what voter IDs were acceptable, but they only funded it to the tune of $1 million plus, and it, hardly any amount of money to cover a state as large as Texas or an educational process that's very extensive and required.
Also, journalists have tried to get information from the Secretary of State's office about how they spend that money for that purpose, and they will not release it. They say that it is not public information, that it's exempt because this is proprietary information, that they work with an advertising company, and so it has the Lockheed exemption when it comes to public information. So we have no idea how that money is being spent.
That's exactly right. You know, and they're public funds and
it's taxpayer dollars.
Taxpayer dollars, and it should be transparent. People should know what that money is being used for.
And it really matters because you can target advertising very precisely these days. You can go to certain demographics and remind them to vote, but forget to involve other parts of the population.
Yeah, I saw some data a couple of days ago that showed that indicated that 89% of the American public is already in somebody's database with all their details, and everybody knows exactly who you are, where you live, how you think, and what you want to buy.
Exactly. You are the product. Let me go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We're talking about voting rights on this election day. With me in the studio is Henry Flores, and Cassio is on the line. Cassio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Go ahead.
I just wanted to be able to kind of share a little bit of the, I guess, you know, the fruit of what exactly your guest is talking about. I'm a high school educator, and I was involved this in the last couple of months on getting students registered and take them to the poll. We had 24 first-time voters.
Awesome.
Many of them first time to vote for their family, no one in their family's ever voted before. And, you know, one of the things that kind of kept coming up, and, you know, he brought up, you know, voting education. I was very surprised by how many of these young people had fears of voting. I mean, everything from they thought, as soon as I register to vote, I got to go to jury duty. If I vote once, I have to vote every time or I'll get fined. If I vote, if someone's undocumented in my family, they'll find out. If someone, you know, has had a previous warrant, they're going to come for them. And it was just really sad to see in a school that's, you know, predominantly, you know, Latino students to just think about, you know, the consequences of some of the historical things that have happened and how they're still living on. You know, like I said, our students, you know, for the most part, were fearful, you know, to register to vote. We hopefully got past that, and we had some really, really excited, you know, young people that did their research and were able to have their voices heard.
Cassio, thanks for calling in. Those are some great points there. Henry Flores, is there a cultural attitude of just keep your head down?
Well, I'm not sure it's cultural. I think it's the caller was really interesting because he used a very interesting word that I'm actually doing some research on right now, and that's fear. And there's a fear embedded in folks' memory about things of this nature, that there were immigration roundups. The police would run dragnets in the community. The immigration authorities would do the same thing. If I register to the votes, the government's going to know I'm on a list, and who knows what's going to happen then. The fear of going serving on a jury was interesting because, you know, that's a great American citizen responsibility. I kind of enjoy sitting on a jury, but they never call me. Those might be famous last words. But anyway, so there's this underlying fear that really drives people away from the polls. And I think it affects minority communities more than any other of the communities, and that may explain some of the lower voter turnout in those communities.
Another caller. This is Ben. And hi, Ben. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. How you going?
Good. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, I was just calling in today. I guess you guys aren't necessarily the best place to do it, but I wanted to kind of complain about the system, if you will. Basically,
no.
I went in to vote early. My wife and I moved right around the cutoff time for the change of address, so I chose not to because of all the failures in the system and the problems that are associated with it. So I left my old address. The reason, because last time I moved, they told me when I went to my new polling station that I could just fill out a change of address form, vote, and it would update that way. So I chose to try to do it that way. When I got to the San Antonio location, I pretty much got shouted at by the lady, and 'cause I could see it, she was frustrated. You know, there was a long line, and she didn't want to deal with problems. She just wanted to get people through. So basically, I was turned away to vote early in San Antonio. And I went and drove all the way from almost in Boulevardia and San Antonio on the north side, all the way down to Pleasanton, just so I could cast my vote. And when I got down there, the ladies that were down there helped me out, told me exactly what I suspected, that you can, in fact, go to your new location, fill out a change of address form, and make your vote happen there. You don't have to go to where you lived before. Because, for example, if I moved from Amarillo, I can't make it all the way back up there today very easily. So there's got to be a system in place. So if they turn you away and tell you have to go to where you used to live, tell them that's a load of BS. You can't do that, and you can actually fill out a change of address form on the spot and cast your vote there.
Right, Ben.
So I just wanted to get that out.
Yeah. So, quick question: you changed counties, or did you stay in the same county?
I was in Atascosa County, is where my old address was, and I moved back to Bexar County. So, like I said, it was right around the cutoff time for the change of address. Because of the way the system works, and it's kind of rigged to not let you vote.
Right.
I chose to not because I wanted to fill out a change of address form at my new location like I had done the previous time in the 2016 election.
Got it, Ben. Thank you for that call. Henry Flores.
Yeah, you know, Ben Brett brings up a very good point. For one, I'm happy he called in because he raises one interesting issue about the election system itself. The Texas election system and the way we go about registering voters and the way we go about getting them to the polls and checking whether or not they're registered and so forth to allow them to cast a ballot is antiquated. And it's not very efficient. And I think we're in the next session or some future legislative session, somebody has got to take, some legislator has to take the bull by the horns and sit down and say, do we have to reform this system? Why is it so clunky? You know.
Well, as I understand it, the system that we have now, voter registration system, was created in 1966. As Texans finally repealed the poll tax, they created a voter registration system.
Exactly.
And they have been reluctant to update it since.
Oh yeah, I know. And you know, it's antiquated. It really needs to be reworked completely.
Right. So, I mean, Texans voted. It was on November 8th, 1966. Texans finally voted to repeal the poll tax. But this was only after the Supreme Court said that we had to do it, and that the United States government, we had passed, it ratified a constitutional amendment. Was it the 24th Amendment?
I don't remember, but
and
I think so.
Which said no more poll taxes. And Texas didn't ratify that amendment until 1977, a decade after it went into effect.
We're a little bit slow.
A little bit slow on that. Yeah. But it kind of shows you the history that we have in Texas when it comes to dragging the feet, when it comes to making voting easy and effective and trying to help people get to the polls. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Max Feldman to talk about democracy in action and what's happening with voting rights and elections in America. Henry Flores is going to stick with us. Phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, you can call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this.
For 50 years, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund has been considered the law firm of the Latino community.
We've worked for decades to make sure that Latino kids have equal opportunity to education, for example, regardless of immigration status.
A conversation with MALDEF's Vice President of Litigation, Nina Perales, next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about your voting rights. How secure are they? Are there people in the country who are interested in trying to weaken your ability to get to the polls and have your voice heard, being able to exercise your franchise? With me in the studio, we have Henry Flores, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Mary's University, author of the book Latinos and the Voting Rights Act. And Max Feldman is on the line. He's a counsel in the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice in New York University. He focuses on voting rights and elections. And Max, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
What are you looking at today?
Well, we're tracking a lot of, activity across the country. Obviously, there's extraordinary enthusiasm. I think we've seen over the past couple of weeks a major surge in early voting around the country. At the same time, people continue to try to intimidate voters, discourage voters from going to the polls. But hopefully we'll have excellent turnout today and people will really make their voice heard.
Max, have you heard about this thing that's going on in El Paso with the Border Patrol?
I just saw an article about it, but I haven't really had the chance to dig into it.
From what I understand, that the Border Patrol has called for a special emergency exercise that they're doing in some neighborhoods, Latino neighborhoods in El Paso, where they're doing crowd control exercises, which they're standing on street corners when they're all in riot regalia with machine guns. And I mean, that would be an intimidation tactic, just looking at it.
It certainly sounds that way to me. I mean, I don't know all of the details, but it seems like a pretty extraordinary attempt at intimidation. And I think one of the things that you see in the voting space, if you look at the history, is that people will always come up with new and creative ways to intimidate and discourage voters. So this is I don't know all the details, but it seems like a pretty egregious example of that.
They have put out a statement where they deny this has anything to do with the election. We call this, the legalese is coinkydink for that. And so, Henry Flores, you've written the book, Latinos and the Voting Rights Act. Does this thing going on in El Paso, we don't know the details. All we can see are the optics, and we have a nose. Does this pass the smell test?
No. No, it doesn't. Texas, as I related in one of the chapters in my book, has a rich history of just continually putting up barriers that keep getting struck down by the courts because there's watchdogs that MALDEF and the Lawyers Committee, the NAACP, ACLU, et cetera, who have sued the state throughout the decades on a lot of these barriers. And the court keeps ruling against the state of Texas, and Texas keeps putting them up and keeps putting them up, and the courts rule against them. The most recent one is the voter ID lawsuit that's up there that's still in the court system. It hasn't been finally decided. But we've had a rich history from everything from going back to the 19th century, corralling Mexicans on ranches and making sure they voted for the way the ranch owner wanted them to vote. Yeah, the padrón wanted them to vote, to paying for their boats in San Antonio, Texas, to, name it. So for me,
that's paying for the poll tax. We had a huge machine here in San Antonio where they would gin up the votes. C.K. Yeah. Quinn, who was a San Antonio mayor and then became a judge, he ran a political machine where he rounded up votes, well as Owen Kilday, who was the sheriff for many decades. He himself also had a voting machine where they would, it's documented that politicians would pay them for a certain number of votes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I mean, my grandfather worked for that machine and they got so much money for so many heads delivered to the polls. Absolutely. And so, no, for me, this is just another Texas, you know, the Border Patrol is not Texas state. It's a federal agency, but it's in the state of Texas. And for me to see this kind of activity happen,
but it's not just unusual. I mean, it's happening in El Paso, which is where Beto O'Rourke's from.
Sure.
And they were expecting, you know, a high number of people voting because he's their homie and they're going to support him. And, you know, and this thing just happens to happen on that day. It's kind of like, that's weird. Let's go to the calls. 210-614-8980. Kayla is on the line. Kayla, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. So I guess my kind of question, I participated in early voting on the second day, and there were a lot of people who weren't sure if they could vote with just their ID. They were hearing a lot about the voter registration cards and realizing that they didn't have one on them. Some people were even leaving because they assumed that they couldn't vote because they didn't have a voter registration card. And I guess I was just wondering if this is a tactic used, not really advertising that you can vote with just your ID or your driver's license, if constantly saying have your voter registration card and also not saying have your ID out is kind of a way to get people to not vote as much.
Kayla, thank you for that call. Henry Flores, what do you think?
The answer, yes. Part of the difficulty with the voter ID law was that there wasn't sufficient amount of money put into education for.
But I think she's talking about the voter registration card.
Oh, the vote. Well, yeah. I mean,
you don't have to have your voter registration card to vote.
Frankly, you don't need any kind of identification to vote because you can cast a provisional ballot. Now you have to go to the county courthouse later and verify using proper ID that you are who you are on that provisional ballot. But the point I was trying to make is we have a very poor way of educating the public about exactly what you need to have to vote or what you don't need to have to vote.
Okay, but if you have a driver's license,
you can vote.
Go vote.
Go vote, for heaven's sakes, yes.
All right. And so Max Feldman, so you're having more of a national view. And as we talk about things like the complications of having voter registration card in Texas, and you must be thinking, why are they still doing it this way down in Texas? This is not...
Well, I will say the Brennan Center represents the Texas NAACP and the Mexican-American Legislative Caucus in the challenge to Texas voter ID law over the past several years. So I have become deeply familiar with Texas's voter ID law, and you know, to Professor Flores's point, the too often the absence or lack of investment in education about the ID law. And I mean, Texas has had, because it attempted to enact this very strict law, or it did enact this very strict law back in 2011, and then attempted to implement it in 2013, and then it kept getting struck down by the courts, has had a series of different provisions governing its elections with respect to voter ID over the past several election cycles. So it's no wonder that there's confusion out there, and it takes real investment and commitment to educate people about what the requirements are.
But different states have found other ways to have elections that are secure and effective, and they don't require this voter registration process that seems to be just another hurdle to people who want to participate. I mean, is that true?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Here in New York, which is where I am, you know, they do a signature match. You go and you sign in the poll book, and you know, you're validated to vote. And the issue here, in part, is that these voter ID laws are justified by spreading what is really a myth about the incidence of in-person voter fraud. The Brennan Center has studied this extensively, and it really just doesn't happen very often. And that's the justification that's often used to enact these very restrictive and often discriminatory voter ID laws. But the reality is that in-person voter fraud just doesn't happen all that regularly. And you can imagine why. The punishment is extremely high to go in and lie about who you are to cast one vote out of many millions often. So I completely agree. There are other states that that haven't seen fit to enact, you know, these severe voter ID laws.
So we do want to let you know that, according to my producer, and who got the information, the U.S. Border Patrol abruptly canceled its Election Day crowd control exercise immediately without stating a reason, and that is according to the Texas Tribune. So is it just one party or one political philosophy that's kind of trying to suppress the vote, Henry Flores? Is it both parties? Who does this?
Well, you know, in Texas, prior to the prior to the Voting Rights Act being passed and everything, it was the Democrats, and then slowly as the parties evolved, it's become predominantly the Republican Party that does this. They're the party in power, and they're the ones who write the laws, and they're the ones that keep getting caught with their hand in the cookie jar, you know, by the federal court system. I think even the Supreme Court's gotten tired of Texas appearing before them all the time with some complaint about how they deal with election laws. But it's a Republican Party at this particular point. And we have documentary evidence where they openly colluded during the congressional redistricting process to manipulate Latino voters to their advantage. And it's like they don't really care about the voting rights of people, nor do they care about the voting rights of Latinos specifically.
So someone's going to say we're just a biased outlet saying
right.
that?
Sure. Sure they're going to say that, but the evidence is there. I mean, you can't turn your back on the evidence.
It's there, black and white. You've seen the emails.
I've seen the email. I have copies of them, you sure?
Okay. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We're talking about your voting rights. Can voter suppression really change how elections turn out? Is voter suppression, is this death by a thousand cuts? So many different ways to intimidate and keep voters from coming to the polls. Or are people going to turn up anyway? You know, what do you think? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On this election day, we're talking about voting rights and how secure are they, how effective are voter suppression campaigns, voter purges, gerrymandering, voter intimidation. What is happening out there? Call in 210-614-8980. MJ is on the line. And MJ, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I'm calling only because, again, another coinkydink, as you said. I have an 18-year-old daughter who's a big Beto supporter. She volunteered to the campaign pretty extensively, and she never received her voter registration card in the mail. I mailed it for her at the post office on the 7th of October, so it should have been here in plenty of time. I got mine, my son got his, my daughter didn't get hers, and she's exactly the demographic that the powers that currently be are sort of in opposition to. She's pretty liberal. And that now she believes that she cannot vote. I don't know whether that's true or not, because there's no one to call. So we have a limited ability to find out the answers without going down there and standing in an extensive line. So she's really frustrated and feels really thwarted. And this is her first election of any kind, and she was real excited about participating in it.
All right, MJ, thank you for that. And let me get a reaction from Max Feldman. He's with the Brenham Center Just for Justice.
I'm sorry, I dropped off for a little bit there, but I think I got the end of it. I mean, it sounds extremely frustrating what happened here. I'm not exactly sure. I didn't hear all of the details of what happened, but I do think it's, you know, I think one of the most troubling things, having been in this space for a little while now, is seeing, you know, both young people trying to vote in their first election and older people who will do anything to get to the polls, and then they find themselves disenfranchised because of mistakes or other things done by their election officials.
Right.
And Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that you do not have to have a registration card to vote. That is not something that you have to have on your person in order to cast a ballot here in Texas. But people, I mean, there's a case here in Texas where a woman went to go vote, and she was still an active felon, and she cast a provisional ballot, and she got 5 years in jail, Henry Flores. And so people, this is wondering, like, what happened? Why is that intimidation?
Oh, yeah, sure it is. The question that I would have, though, was that did she petition to get her voting rights back?
Right. Well,
you know, if she didn't petition to get her voting rights back, well, then they could prosecute her. But if she did,
well, she got prosecuted. She got thrown in jail for 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, if she did petition and got her voting rights back, then there's something wrong.
You know, so there is also another amendment. This is the 26th Amendment, and this is the one that moved the voting age to 18. Does this make young voters a special class? Do they get special, you know, as a constitutional amendment making 18-year-olds eligible to vote, should they be treated as a special class of voters?
Well, when you use that term special class, that means that they've got special rights under the Constitution. But
right.
I think they're, yep. You know, 18 is a for to get your voting rights at the age of 18 is like part of the rite of passage, becoming adult and a real citizen in the United States. And so you are special in that regards. And I think that you should take that responsibility seriously and be joyous to go and cast a vote.
And Max Feldman?
Sure. I mean, I think the key here is that the amendment protects, it doesn't give them special rights, it protects them from discrimination. And all too often, we do see states discriminating against young and student voters. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, we saw that here at San Marcos, at Texas State University, where we saw the removal of early voting there, and it took action by the Texas Civil Rights Project to get voting restored at that location. And these are young voters who have been like showing a lot of exuberance, and then suddenly it seems like special action has been taken against them.
Absolutely, and that's been an ongoing problem in Waller County, where the county continuously tries to disenfranchise these students, it seems.
Right, at Texas A&M in Prairie View.
Prairie View A&M, yeah.
All right, I'm going to get a caller on the air, and Marty. Hey, Marty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. So I am an active voter. I vote every opportunity that I can, and I've not recently moved, and I go to the same polling place every time. This time, however, when I went, I was informed that my status was changed to suspense. I was unclear what that meant, and nobody could explain it to me, and I was just curious if it had anything to do with the new identification law.
Suspense. That's what they told you. What is that? Have you ever heard of that, Henry?
Yeah.
What is that?
A voter registration could be suspended if you've not returned a postcard, or did you get a postcard in the mail asking you to verify your registration to renew it?
Nope. I certainly did not, and I would have. I actually had a current voter registration card with me.
And is it current?
Yes, sir.
There's a law that allows people to challenge someone's voter registration ability, and could someone have done that?
Yeah, but I mean, only after the action happened would they be suspended.
And was there anyone else at that polling site, Marty, that had that occurrence, that type of thing?
Not while I was there. Everybody was, you know, just question marks looking at me like, what does that mean? So apparently not.
Did they let you vote?
Yes, they did.
Oh, okay.
An actual ballot or the backup ballot?
No, an actual ballot.
Great. All right. Well, good to hear it, Marty. Thank you for calling in, letting us know about that.
I checked with the county elections office after the election.
All right. And so Luke, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, sir.
Hi. I just wanted to reply to the caller before last that whose daughter did not receive the voter registration card and wasn't sure if she was registered. She should go to the Secretary of State's Am I Registered webpage. There's a short link to it. If you go to bit.ly/txreg, mm-hmm. that'll take you to that page. And you can look up the voter's information, tell you right there whether the person's registered.
All right, Luke, thank you for that tidbit of information and very good, useful information. Now let's go to Eric. Eric, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I had two questions, and I was told that maybe I should stick to one. I don't know what the call screener put on there, but it's more my second question / statement. You've given a lot of examples, especially more recent history. Some of the older examples are obviously racist or immoral, or unethical. But more recently, it seems that maybe some of the ways that people are being quote unquote suppressed, that it wouldn't necessarily favor one party over the other. And I don't understand the benefit of just reducing the overall numbers, for one party or the other. You understand what I mean?
Sure. And what was your other question, just to get you in?
Well, my other question was, I'm having a hard time remembering what it was like, 10 years ago to vote, because I always brought my voter registration card with me. And it required to have your voter registration card, 10, 15 years ago, like physically with you?
All right. Well, thanks, Eric, for both those questions. So the first one about, does voter suppression favor one political point of view over another? Let's first go to Henry Flores.
Well, in Texas, it does. And because the voter suppression in Texas falls mostly on minority groups, Latinos and African Americans, and young people and older voters. Those are the types of voters that have a tendency of voting Democratic. So the voter suppression in Texas, at least, favors Republicans.
Also, they have information on you. They know what you're likely to vote on based upon all sorts of data points that they've gathered over the time. And yeah. And they're very, even though you may think they're just drawing a map to get to point A to get to point B, but they're looking at households and neighborhoods and precincts and being very precise about those things.
Oh, yeah. No, each county keeps a frequent voter database, and we know exactly which elections every voter votes in, how often they vote, what precincts they live in. And you can draw some conclusions about, you can see who participates in Democratic primaries and so forth and so on, Republican primaries. And so it's when it comes to redistricting, you can use a lot of those data are used to gerrymander and move voters that prefer one party over another from one district, congressional district, or state house district, or state senatorial district to another.
Right. And Max Feldman at the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice, is voter suppression becoming more of a thing?
I would say in recent years, we have seen an increase in the number of laws that have been passed by states that have a suppressive effect on the vote. So since the start of 2011, 24 states have enacted new suppressive laws that make it more difficult for people to vote. Now, obviously, we have a long history of voter suppression in this country, but I think it is really shocking, this more recent kind of tide of suppressive voting laws in the states.
So this, we got a minute left, but really quickly, Max, secretaries of state running for governor, they're in control of the whole voting system. Should that be just taboo? Should there be some way to keep that from happening?
That's a great question. I do think that we are seeing in this election some of the problems with that sort of system. And it's a problem more generally in some sense of having politicians in charge of the, some of the voting processes.
It's Stalinistic in some sort of ways. So I want to thank, because that's what he said. It doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the votes, is what Stalin said. All right, Max Feldman from the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice at New York University, and Henry Flores, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Mary's University, author of the book Latinos and the Voting Rights Act. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.